Good morning, Pacific Palisades. Actually, I have no idea if it's morning for you or not, because this is the Pali Podcast, and you could be listening to it at any time. Welcome to the August edition of Pali Podcast, still socially distanced in its recording, properly taking protocols to guard against COVID-19. How's it going for you, Steve Krohn?
Well, things are great, all things considered. I mean, we're healthy and alive. I wish life would get back to normal, but, you know, it's a bright day in the Palisades, and we have two lovely, bright, young, enterprising women to talk to today. So I'm excited to get on with our podcast.
Yeah, speaking about normalizing things, we're going to talk today to two of the founders of a program called Board of Boredom. You can find them at boardofboredom.org. The founders were Palisadians, and the people on the board who are helping push this project forward happen to be connected to Pacific Palisades. We're going to speak to one founder who's a Palisadian and a rising senior at Harvard Westlake, and another who is in charge of PR, which is why they're here today, who happens to go to Palisades High School, rising senior there too. So a big year for these two ahead, but they're also putting a whole lot of their time into launching this nonprofit, which actually aims to normalize learning for a whole lot of people this year as this state, this city, this county looks ahead to virtual learning, to e-learning, online learning. These guys have recognized the fact that there are going to be a lot of people who are going to be missing some serious education, and that the tech divide is only going to grow, and it's only going to disserve people who have been historically underserved. And so these guys have launched a tutorial program, which they'll tell us about, but I think it's grown well beyond tutorial to be able to reach out to people who maybe don't have connectivity, can't learn that well online, you know, aren't used to virtual learning, and to help push them along and guard against what we all expect is going to be a huge learning loss this year as a result of COVID-19. So I'd like to welcome Hope Schinderman, one of the founders of boardofboredom.org, to our show, and Sarah Kagayama, who is spearheading their marketing and public relations. Sarah, I'm going to hand it to you first because you were our introduction to this program. You reached out to Paul Revere, which I thought was really smart of you because Paul Revere is one of those schools that's really thinking about the learning loss. So I want you to tell me a little bit about yourself, and then we're going to throw it over to Hope and talk about how you guys founded this organization and if you're shocked at the trajectory, and then we'll get into the details. So Sarah, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So my name is Sarah. I'm a rising senior at Pali. I joined Board of Boredom because I knew Hope from the Mayor's Youth Council, and she reached out to us. And I think it's an incredible organization. The reason I chose to reach out to Paul Revere is because I decided to reach out to all of my previous schools in the hopes that we could just help as many kids as possible.
That's great. So you had a connection to Paul Revere.
Yeah, I went there for middle school.
Got it. Okay. Hope, tell us a little bit about yourself, because I feel like Board of Boredom was your brainchild, and it was inspired a little bit out of some personal experience, as well as your, you know, very sage recognition that this could be sorely needed at this time. So tell us a little bit about yourself and what it looked like that day when you thought this would be a good time to launch this.
All right, will do. Thank you so much. So I am a neurodiverse learner, and I realized that there were some challenges that could be presented to non-neurotypical people and other students who didn't, you know, resemble what often comes to mind when you think of the typical students. So that includes, you know, students who speak English as a second language, students who might have physical or intellectual disabilities, stuff like that. So essentially, I was sitting in bed on a Thursday of the second week of quarantine after an AP US history exam, kind of thinking to myself about how impressed I was by how well my own teachers were handling the change to distance learning. And I just really felt so thankful that I was able to receive such an amazing education despite being unable to attend a physical school. However, I recognize that a lot of people just weren't receiving adequate enrichment during this time, and that is if they were receiving any at all. For example, I had a couple friends who told me that their teachers had simply stopped teaching or had just given a packet to them and said, go, do this, turn it in June. And I've also always been conscious of the fact that non-neurotypical children and English as a second language students and students from lower socioeconomic brackets have traditionally been excluded from enrichment opportunities. And I really wanted to prevent that from happening during this unprecedented time when they would particularly be struggling in the classroom. And I wanted to provide an opportunity for equal education where people could receive the adequate support that they needed during COVID-19 and beyond.
So let me ask you about neurodivergency. I suspect that might be a new term for people out there. It was for me, even though I have three kids and I sit on a school board. What is neurodivergent and tell us how common or uncommon you think it is?
So neurodivergent is synonymous to non-neurotypicality and neurodiversity and all of those words, which are a lot of buzzwords. Basically, these are just people with some learning challenges and learning differences that differ from the majority of the population. So these things can be spectrum disorders, such as autism or Asperger's, but they can also look like ADHD or dyspraxia or dysgraphia, dyslexia, stuff like that. So there are a multitude of different learning challenges that people can have that all fit into the category of neurodivergence. And there is a significant portion of the population that is diagnosed as neurodivergent, but then the population of people who are undiagnosed or self-diagnosed is obviously larger. And it's just really important that neurodivergent, non-neurotypical people are able to receive adequate support, because for a lot of us, it's really important to receive one-on-one communication with our tutors and instruction in school and receive a little bit of special attention in the classroom. Really, with this new digital learning and remote learning, that isn't entirely possible. So one of the goals of Board of Boredom is to provide that additional support through our one-on-one tutoring sessions and also have the ability to focus on our non-neurotypical students when they require it during group sessions, and then again, provide that supplementary support through individual sessions.
So I understand that you started during the pandemic and it was a response to the pandemic, but it sounds to me like what you're trying to help students with goes beyond the pandemic. I mean, this is something that students who are neurodivergent in school districts where they're not getting special training, special help, are going to need that whether there's school in session or school out of session. So is this something that you foresee will continue in the future once the pandemic is over?
100%. We initially started as a response to the pandemic. You're totally correct in that. But as we progressed, we realized that the work we were doing with students who don't speak English as their first language, our international students and neurodiverse students and students from lower income brackets who would ordinarily not be able to afford any kind of enrichment program like ours, we realized that it was really important and it was something that could function beyond the scope of the pandemic. We just believe that our services have been really valuable, and we've seen that with the kids and the parents and families who use them. We've seen how much of a difference it makes in their lives. And our ultimate goal is educational equality for all. And that's not an issue that just exists during a pandemic. It has always been the case and will continue to be the case unless people like us take it upon ourselves to try to mitigate the effects of educational inequality and push for a more just world. And that's what we're doing here at Board of Boredom and wish to continue to do for as long as we can.
Building off of what Hope is saying, my primary role as Director of Public Relations is overseeing outreach to all of these communities. The specific ones we are focusing on right now, there are three categories. One is medical, so neurodiverse, children's hospitals, children with disabilities, things in that sector. The second one is low income and inner city schools. And the third one would be people experiencing homelessness, particularly children and families.
And of course, anyone can come use our services. We're need-based in the sense that anyone who feels they need it can come join our classes, receive individual tutoring from us. We have the resources to help everyone we possibly can. So if someone feels like they need it, regardless of where they're from, where they're located, what their situation at home is, we are happy to provide that help.
And how do students find out about your program? If somebody's floundering in school, is it just word of mouth, or do you actively go out and publicize it in the student community?
Yeah, so we actively publicize it. So we highly encourage our tutors to reach out to their previous schools that they've attended. And the PR team really works on outreach to other to create partnerships with other programs or organizations like ours. For example, we are currently working on a partnership with USC's Caruso Family Center with regard to providing tutors in ASL to primarily Spanish-speaking families who otherwise wouldn't really be able to afford the services.
What has been the response of the various schools, the teachers, the administrators? Are they receptive to this, or do any of them feel threatened that you can tell where, like, what do you mean? We got a bunch of teenage girls and young men coming in and telling us, you know, how we should tutor our students or what we should do to make up for the education they're not getting. I would imagine some of them would be concerned about that.
From what I've seen, teachers and administrators are actually very happy that we're doing what we're doing, because it's not necessarily that we're trying to take these jobs away from teachers. It's more to help provide support for their students so that they can better succeed.
It's good to hear.
And it's to alleviate some of the burden on teachers, because obviously these unprecedented times are affecting teachers from their own personal lives. A lot of times they'll have families of their own and are just trying to navigate this and trying to pay as much attention to their students as they can. But oftentimes it isn't really possible, possibly because of the quantity of students, because of things that a teacher might have going on in their personal life, because of technological issues, whatever it might be. And the teachers that we've spoken to have been overwhelmingly positive in their response to Board of Boredom, because they think it's a valuable service that supplements the great work that they're already doing in the classroom.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like schools and administrators and teachers, at least on the West Side or, you know, maybe across LAUSD, probably should be receptive. And Sarah, I was going to ask you how it's going with your outreach. I feel like the schools, you know, Steve and I had a conversation with Nick Melvoin a couple of months ago, and I think that there was an admission that this year of learning and all of its oddities and all the new things they're going to be trying definitely will result in some learning loss. So they should be receptive. But Sarah, how is it going as you reach out to, let's say, Children's Hospital or even, you know, kids who are facing homelessness? I feel like, A, I'm hoping you're going to tell me it's going well. B, I feel like this is completely uncharted territory. And, you know, talk about silver linings to COVID-19. Just as Steve was saying, I think that you guys may have launched this as a response to COVID-19, but it certainly is something that's well needed. And if we can use technology to bridge the learning divide that has always been there, it would really be a coup de force. So how is it going as you reach out to some of those, you know, more unlikely audiences and tell them this is available?
Yeah, so it's actually been going really well. We're working on several partnerships right now. For example, like the Caruso Family Center, and we also, I personally have ties to the Teen Court Program and PESA. So we're working on a partnership with that to sort of tie in with more LAUSD schools and the juvenile system. We spoke recently with Free Arts, which is a program that provides arts education to people experiencing homelessness, be it in shelters or other services. And later today, we're meeting actually with Speak Up, who does focus on neurodiverse services. So,
have you heard of a place called Safe Place for Youth?
I have not, no.
Actually, they brought it up in our Mayor's Youth Council a little bit.
Oh, really? We can talk about Mayor's Youth Council, too. But yeah, they help support kids who are experiencing homelessness. You know, things become a little tougher for them. So I would think that that's a place where your involvement and the resources that you can offer can be pivotal. Let's talk about the resources, you guys. You're growing at the speed of sound. You're growing exponentially. Tell us, you know, how did you start? You started with maybe a Zoom call or a phone call to a handful of friends. And where are you now?
Well, so we started at me sending a vaguely cryptic group text to four other people being like, guys, have an idea. Let's have a group FaceTime. And of course, it was group FaceTime because we hadn't yet mastered the art of Zoom. So, you know, you got to do what you got to do. Now we're all Zoom experts sometimes. And so we had that group FaceTime and I presented the idea to my four co-founders about Possibly providing individual tutoring to supplement the learning that people might lose in the classroom, or to provide extra support for students who feel like they need it during these unprecedented times. And through that call, we came up with the idea of some group classes because we thought that, you know, there might be a nice social aspect to those classes. And that's what we've seen from our parent feedback and from the student feedback as well. And we figured that these classes would be a nice way to learn about topics that genuinely interest the kids, as well as their academics that they need support on, in an environment with other similar students with similar interests. And then we decided to have some fun classes like yoga, Zumba, dance, because we realized that a lot of the younger kids were probably really devoid of things to do. One of my teachers actually told me that her kid, who was younger, was really struggling during these times because she was struggling with the lack of social interaction and also the lack of just activity. And we've seen that these classes have a big effect on families because they really make the kids happy, which is something that we really love to see and we love to hear. And the parents have also told us that it alleviates a large burden on them because a lot of parents work, and a lot of our base includes frontline workers, whether that means health workers or people whose jobs are considered essential during these times and are required to go into the office. And you know, they said that they're really thankful to provide this source of entertainment and activity to their kids. And, you know, we can tire out the younger ones with our dance classes a little bit. And we also have things like story time that we offer, which is 30, 45 minutes, where one of our volunteers reads picture books and easy reader books to the younger kids, usually preschool to first or second grade, a little bit of a fun activity to do. And of course, we offer story time in a couple of different languages to make sure that we're all inclusive.
So your range in age extends down to first grade?
Our range in age extends down to preschool, actually. We're preschool through 12th grade, although the high school is a pretty recent addition. So basically, for our younger kids, we have a lot of classes like story time, dance classes, Zumba, yoga, exercise classes, drawing classes, things that they can join and enjoy. But we also have some individual programming going on for those younger kids as well. It's really interesting because a lot of parents have requested that we help their young kids, preschoolers, with pre-mathematics and helping them learn how to read. We have a bunch of people who are work with our English department in our program who are just working on younger kids with legitimately teaching them how to read.
How many volunteers do you have?
So when we last spoke, we had 399 volunteers, and this is a testament to how much we've grown because we now have 409 volunteers.
So I have a question, something you just brought up. I hadn't thought of it before, but teaching preschoolers and elementary school kids how to read, how to do math and stuff like that, does that not take specialized skill? I mean, can someone who's bright and articulate and educated like you, and I suspect the other people that are participating, do you necessarily have the skills to teach those types of subjects to preschoolers?
Yeah, that's an amazing question. Thank you so much. So all of our volunteers each have these really unique skill sets and unique interests. And obviously teaching younger kids how to read and how to count, stuff like that, isn't in everyone's wheelhouse and isn't something that's really accessible to everyone. However, we do have a lot of students who are really dedicated to early childhood education. And that is precisely why they joined our program, so that they could work with those younger kids and doing things like improving literacy, teaching them how to read, teaching them pre-mathematics, stuff like that, which is just really awesome to see, because we have a lot of people come in being like, I will not teach people younger than sixth grade, but also people coming in saying, I won't teach people over third grade, because everyone knows what they want to do. We actually have a pretty rigorous application process that you can look at if you go to the volunteer tab of our website. And on that form, we ask people about the subjects that they want to teach, how often they want to teach, if they want to do individual sessions or if they want to do group sessions or both. So we just really make sure that we have a diverse base of volunteers who can cover any subject that's needed, each with their own skill sets and interests.
And because you are 100% virtual, correct? Because of the pandemic?
Yes.
You, as I understand it, you have students not just from the LA area, not just from California, and not just from the United States. Is that right?
Oh, that is 100% correct. We are so pleased to have students across all continents except Antarctica for obvious reasons. And we're really thankful for that. And we teach our group classes in three different languages to make sure that everyone has access. And we provide individual sessions conducted in even more languages to make sure that, again, everyone can have access. And when we encounter someone who wants their tutors conducted in a language that we don't know if we have a tutor who speaks, we can go on recruitment drives and get people to apply to teach that specifically. And as Sarah mentioned in the chat of this Zoom meeting, we do have tutors from all over the world as well, which is just really amazing to see. And one of my favorite parts of Board of Boredom personally is getting reports from all of the volunteers telling me about how thankful they are for this opportunity, because it's an amazing way for them to be social justice warriors and give back to their communities. But it's also, they've told me, a really great opportunity to form lifelong friendships with people, and oftentimes people from the other side of the country or world, which is just really great to see, because while we're focusing on improving connectivity for students who need it, we're also providing that for our volunteers. And that's one of the reasons why Board of Boredom is really unique as well, because we really emphasize team building and connection between our volunteers. We have a lot of team building meetings where we'll play games on a Zoom call or discuss important topics. And on our Slack, which is the platform we use for inter-organizational communication, we have a channel that is dedicated for a channel or a group chat type thing, except for it has 409 people, that is dedicated to fun memes, casual conversation, humor, and other nonsense. And that is always going off with really awesome conversation topics, whether it's about politics, ways to give back for the community, someone who's conducting a research project and needs some help with it, or random topics, telling jokes, sending photos of our pets, stuff like that. It's just a really awesome community, and everyone seems to really love engaging with it, no matter where they're located geographically.
So I do find it incredibly impressive that, having begun on March 11th, is it?
Somewhere around then, yeah.
Yeah, somewhere in the middle of March of 2020, you guys have already expanded to being kind of an international organization. I find it not only impressive that you have students that, you know, use your resources from around the world, but that you have tutors who come to you from around the globe, and that you're already offering a couple of different languages. So I honestly wonder if this, not just you guys, but this era is a gateway to, you know, reimagining education and taking another look at how we get educated. You know, is it always the holder of all knowledge who stands up in the front of the class, or can it be more of a communal process? It's cool that you guys as volunteers get together and, you know, tap each other on the back. But I want to also make a note that you have a lot of very happy parents out there. You've got some really cool testimonials. One mom says, she says, "I just wanted to give you and your peers much praise for your wonderful initiative for this community. My fourth grader has really enjoyed the opportunities of having additional learning time. It's a difficult time for everybody," she says, "and neurodiverse kids especially struggle without routine and enrichment. I know there are so many parents who are overwhelmed by the brilliant help that you're offering." That is quite a testimonial, Hope. How does that make you? And I know you have others you can share with us if you want, but how does that make you feel? You're a young kid who's literally part of the solution.
Yeah, thank you so much. And as you said earlier, you're feeling that this is going to be a period of change for the educational system. And that's obviously what the hope is, because it's been coming for some time, and events like these are just really pushing it forward. And programs like ours, we hope to be spearheading that, you know, important policy change and program change as well, so that we can really truly provide educational equality for all. But so that testimonial that you referenced specifically, we received that one in April, kind of after our spring break, and I got that in an email, and I immediately sent it to everyone who was involved in Board of Boredom at that time, which was only about 70 some odd people. And I was smiling so much, probably smiling more than I was pre-pandemic, and almost in happy tears. And I sent a screenshot of that email to everyone in the organization, and everyone was just so overwhelmed with gratitude and feeling so happy about all of the work that they were doing. We always love when we receive testimonials and comments like these. And we always immediately share them with all the volunteers just to let them know what amazing work they're doing. And it really does bring a smile to my face because I know that we're all making a difference in people's lives. I'm just so proud of everyone who's involved at the Board of Boredom, everyone who took it upon themselves during this time when they could just be binge watching Netflix all day or reading what they wanted, taking it to get themselves ahead in school, stuff like that. But that they took this time and decided to dedicate themselves to helping others. And this dedication is certainly showing through these testimonials. And I could not be happier with where we are today.
It's not the only testimonial. You have a few others and they're pretty good. I know Steve has a question, but let me just touch down to reality for just one second and, you know, bring out the cynic in me just a little bit and say, you two are rising seniors. I assume the other tutors are high schoolers. You're doing something great, no doubt. I see it in your face. I see it when I talk to you. I see it in the testimonials. I know it as a parent. But is this something that your tutors think, I can put this on my college application? You know, I could be sitting at home sipping, a Slurpee, or I could be tutoring. And how does this look for me as a person as I apply out there? Does that come into play?
So I like to think that everyone is volunteering with Board of Boredom just because of this genuine commitment to social justice and making the world a better place. But of course, we know that isn't always necessarily the case. So I'm going to preface this by saying that, again, we have a rigorous application process, and usually we can figure out when someone is trying to get involved with this opportunity as a form of resume padding, and we can sense that. And then usually that will have an effect on the application, and we can tell the people who are genuinely dedicated to the work that we're doing versus the people who just want something else to add to their application. We can really tell, and we're more inclined to accept the people who display that genuine commitment to making positive change in the world and a genuine desire to help tutor and teach others. But, you know, sometimes we can't always tell when that's going on. And as much as we wish we could, and as much as we like to think that that isn't a factor in it, it would be really naive to deny that being the case. And, you know, it's just one more incentive that gets people involved in our program. And what's more is we've had a couple people come tell us as, you know, officers, board members of this program, they said, you know, I initially joined this program because I thought it would be something that would look good on my college resume, another extracurricular that I could add to my list. However, I found myself staying with you guys way beyond how much I intended to because I really fell in love with this program. And that's the volunteers. I've made lifelong friendships, and also the kids I tutor are really adorable and really cool to work with. And I love it here. And you guys have changed me for the better. We've had a lot of volunteers come to us saying, oh, they started this as something to kill time during quarantine, but they realized that they had a genuine love of teaching and education. And it's always amazing to see that testimony from our volunteers.
We also constantly check in with our tutors. We have them fill out forms of their activity, and if they're not necessarily taking on as many classes or individual clients, we'll check in with them and ask, like, hey, is everything all right? Is there anything we can do to help you get more involved in the organization? Also, I do think that while it would be terrible if tutors only did it to pad their resume, I think it's just, like Hope said, kind of an incentive because these tutors are already motivated as is, and we offer, like, this thing to put on your resume, as well as community service hours for their work. So
we've also been authorized to give out the Presidential Volunteer Service Award, which is really cool for a couple of reasons. Obviously, it shows that we're an incredibly legitimate organization, but that's also another incentive for volunteers to really go above and beyond with their work. And we want to award them for it, which is just something that's really important to me.
I have two questions. You screen the tutors. You've talked about that you screen them initially and then you follow up with them periodically. Is there any screening of students? I mean, are there any requirements, anything that is necessary for them to get in the program, or is it come one, come all?
It's definitely a come one, come all program. The way we get students registered is they'll go to our website and their parents will fill out a form saying what kind of tutoring they would like, or if they'd want to be on our mailing list to know the schedule of group classes for each week. But yeah, the main goal, I think, of Board of Boredom is to be accessible to all.
So basically anybody, as far as you're concerned, anywhere in the world who wants to sign up, as long as they can figure out a way to get their computer equipment lined up with yours so that they can have virtual conversations, can participate.
We are very international, and we actually have a couple of special programs that are working with very under-resourced kids from under-resourced communities at the global scale, not just within the United States. For example, we have a program in rural southwestern China to help students who live in an area that's been wracked by natural disaster and forced immigration. And we are working to provide them services that include obviously education, but also foreign language aid that they've expressed interest in. So they've expressed interest in things like learning English. And we're also partnering with some El Salvadorian university students to bring the same project to the Northern Triangle of Central and South America. So that's Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, and really just, you know, the world as a whole and people in conflict areas who wouldn't otherwise have access to this. And then the second thing I wanted to say was, you mentioned connection, and anyone can join us if they have the connection. But, you know, that digital divide is something that we've realized is incredibly pervasive, and the effects of it are being felt even more strongly during these times of the pandemic, because if you don't have access to technology, then you can't receive any education whatsoever, be that with your actual school or other enrichment programs. And so we really have taken it upon ourselves to try to find ways to help close the digital divide. So we've launched some massive fundraising campaigns in order to raise that money for organizations that can help close the digital divide. So we had a virtual benefit concert and a bake sale where basically tutors sign up to bake and drive, and wherever we have tutors, we will send baked goods, and by send I mean someone there will bake it and drive them over to you, drop them off on your porch. That's still going on our website. You can order some brownies or donuts or cake. They're very good from what I hear. And we've been able to raise over $10,000, and we're really proud of ourselves for that. Additionally, we're going to have some merchandise sales coming up soon. And again, all of those proceeds will go to those organizations that are working to close the digital divide. We have some really cool sweatshirts that we designed that you guys can all check out. And there will be a link to fill out a form to purchase those, along with some other merchandise like boarded masks, on our website soon. And again, the proceeds are going to an amazing cause. So if you want to, you can check them out and purchase them. They're really cool.
Wow. It's breathtaking that in 5 months you've gone from a thought in the middle of the night to something as pervasive and international in such a short time. So, which brings up the question in my mind, you're both going to be seniors. You're going to be off in college in a year from now. And I know you'll both be going someplace great because you're phenomenal young people. How do you foresee that Board of Boredom will continue when the original people are not there on a daily basis?
So this is a question that we've been contemplating a lot recently as the school year picks up, because it's something that we've realized that we just have to. But we have a lot of people who are younger, so going into their sophomore and junior year of high school, who have really displayed great dedication to this organization. For example, we're divided into departments based on subject and discipline, and a lot of those department heads are juniors who will likely rise up to the position of a board member and maybe, you know, come in and fulfill the position of PR director or president one day when we graduate and go off to college. And so we're really working with them and training them to be able to succeed us when we leave. And we're trying to work with everyone in our program so much that we can have all of these structures in place and really have a smooth transition. And of course, you know, everyone who was involved in the founding of this project and really helped us grow to where we are today is incredibly dedicated. And if someone wants to, they can stay on all throughout college. We do have a lot of tutors who are university students, and we're really thankful for that. And of course, people like myself will still be involved in a board member capacity and advising everything that is going on with the organization and checking up to make sure everything running smoothly. But I'm really confident that we'll be able to make that transition if the time comes.
Well, it will come.
Yeah, it will come very soon.
You will grow up. You will go off to college. There's no doubt. So,
right.
But it sounds like you're making plans.
Yeah. So you are a 501c3, or you are forming in the process of forming a 501c3. I understand you have a fiscal sponsor, but you are going in that direction. I assume that as you form your 501c3 and you think about your bylaws and you write them, you will have to think about succession and some sort of succession plan. And it does sound like you naturally will have to do that anyway, because you're enterprising young people who are going to move on. But I would assume that you guys as founders will stay on board. I mean, you're making, you know, you're treading this digital path that hasn't been tread before. So I assume that you'll find a way to stay involved and, you know, even, you know, stay connected and stay even involved on a day-to-day basis. And you can comment on that. But what I want to sort of bring out of this is the fact that you guys are digital, the fact that this is all virtual, not only opens up ways to stay involved as far as succession goes, but also what you were talking about, Hope, the fact that you can go into these countries around the globe that have long probably needed this kind of educational resource and take it to them without physically being there. And I find that incredibly impressive and very forward-thinking, very apropos to the time. And again, I know that you have a big social justice presence in your mind. I know that part of your curriculum, I think on Fridays, is like Social Justice Day. So I want you to talk about that. But I come from a third world country. I happen to be an immigrant. I recently went to a refugee camp where I met people from various countries who are languishing in refugee camps. A lot of them are families. They've got children who have huge ambitions. You know, these kids think they're going to grow up to be doctors and lawyers and journalists, but the reality is that they wake up and sort of while away the time until night, and they have no educational resources. And as smart and bright and ambitious as they may be, we all know that without some education, it's going to be hard to attain those dreams. So, you know, my hope for you is that you can continue to raise money, you know, well beyond bake sales. Like, you know, we can reach out to even the Palisades community. This is, after all, the Palisades podcast, and you guys are very impressive Palisadian people. And see if there's a fundraising opportunity for you or grants that can be had, because I think what you're doing is important well beyond your surroundings. So, Hope, take a lead on that, and also tell us a little bit about your social justice programming, because I know it's there and I know it's something that means a lot to you.
Yeah, will do. Thank you so much. So the first thing is, we are not in the business of neocolonialism. We are not trying to do that at all. We just want to provide educational quality for everyone. And that's why it's really important for us to have tutors all over the globe so that we can have those efforts as kind of grassroots things where people can spearhead it from where they're at, and we can provide the resources and the tutors and just help with, you know, locals for achieving that educational quality. So again, it is really important for us to be able to serve everyone. I have done a lot of anti-genocide work and humanitarian work through an organization called JWW that I've interned for a long time now. And And we've been looking at opportunities that we can go into conflict areas and help provide education. So we've been really fleshing out those ideas and seeing where we can go. For example, we're looking at an idea for some partnerships in the DRC, and hopefully we'll be able to actually discuss this further and implement them. And obviously the digital divide is a pervasive issue. That's more, I guess, that is broader spread when you're talking in the global sense. So it's a little bit harder to navigate. And that's why a lot of our fundraising work is also really important. And Palisadians, I'm talking to you again. You can donate on our website, and you can donate through purchasing some really delicious baked goods. Really delicious baked goods, or buying a really comfortable, really cool sweatshirt, and some other merch that will be up there shortly. And, you know, not just self-promo, but actually totally to self-promo. I designed those sweatshirts.
And are there any limits as to how many cookies you can buy or how many sweatshirts you can purchase on your website?
No.
Okay.
I was just going to cut in and say, with regards to more fundraising, we were actually discussing perhaps doing some sort of phone bank soon, where we would just have our tutors call people all night to raise more money. We've also been looking into a grant. Hope, do you want to talk more about that?
Yeah, so we've been looking into a couple of grant opportunities where we can get more money, more to purchase resources and invest back into Board of Boredom as an organization rather than pass on to other organizations that are working on closing the digital divide. So we've just been doing a lot of research for grant opportunities and are dividing up some of the work with filling them out and, you know, just seeing what we can accomplish. All right, so I'm going to go back to the social justice question. At its core, Board of Boredom is a social justice organization. So, of course, we have one day every 2 weeks, an Activism Friday, that is dedicated to teaching about various social issues and teaching our students how to be responsible, well-informed, and ethical global citizens. So these group classes on our Activism Fridays, which are, again, one Friday every 2 weeks, focus on specific themes of social justice. For example, we had one on racial equality, gender identity and LGBTQ plus issues and equality. We had a day dedicated to environmental justice and immigration. So all of themes like that in order to really, again, raise these globally conscious citizens and teach people how to be well-informed global citizens and make positive change in their communities and the world at large through our programs. And it's really great to see these kids developing a passion for social justice and creating change. And we see it through our classes and we see when they talk to us and the people who lead those classes afterwards, asking how they can get involved with certain causes and what they can do to help. We also have a whole activism and social justice department. So these social justice ventures and classes that are with that theme aren't just limited to those Fridays every 2 weeks. No, they're really offered every day. We'll have at least one social justice related class, but those days on Fridays are just dedicated to a specific theme and more organized than just having a couple classes each day or relating to activism.
Sounds like you're developing a curriculum and you have a department and your first department is social justice. Not at all surprising.
For those who haven't been on their website, I looked at it last night and I was blown away. It does look like a curriculum for a high school. There are classes set out every day. There are you can go to another section for tutorials. It's a really impressive website, and there are just so many opportunities for students to learn from that program.
Yeah, I do. I want to echo that. I think it's impressive that I have a feeling you started one day just thinking, hey, something's got to be done. Let's see if we can launch some tutors. I know some smart people. And you've really extended it to a point where it has a curriculum. I mean, I literally think there are people who might decide to just follow your curriculum for a year and see how it goes. So from a social justice point of view, we talked about this a little bit in our pre-interview acclimating ourselves to each other kind of discussion. But, you know, it was easy to recognize early on that in Los Angeles, there should be some tutorial resources for kids who, you know, weren't otherwise going to just be able to call somebody and say, hey, help me get through the year with whatever subject. And I've reached out to various city, county, and agencies to say this need is there. I hear from all of them this overwhelming affirmation that the need is most certainly there, but that the resources are few, you know, the bureaucracy is tough, you know, the time will have to be long. And here I look at you two people who have just kind of, you know, launched a solution. So I commend you, and I wonder if that's the future of problem solving in this world.
Thank you. I'm absolutely beaming. That was so kind of you guys to say. I just wanted to say, because we had some talk about the website from Mr. Crone, I just wanted to say, feel free to check that out, guys. If there are any parents of children or children listening or teenagers, whatever, we have resources that you guys can use. If you want to sign up for individual tutoring, please, please, please do that at boardofboredom.org. And same with checking out our schedule for group classes and joining those. That functions 7 days a week, and we have over 15 classes each day, which is really awesome of us, I think. And then also, I just wanted to shout out our website team because they're really amazing and made it look really pretty.
I just want to say, to the extent that this appeals to Palisadians, if you do click on and you do decide to take on their tutoring services, please also click on and donate, because this is completely pro bono, and those who can pay a bona fide fee for tutorial probably should.
You know, there something just came to me while I was sitting here. I have three grandchildren in Colorado, one of whom is six, and he's been out of school for, 5 months now? And, you know, his mom is teaching him, as is his dad, who's working part-time. But what has occurred to me is that what he's going to miss out on, and it's not really replaceable, is the socialization of being around other kids every day, learning how to get along, sharing, fighting, playing, learning from one another. And his parents are being careful because of the pandemic. And so he's home with his he's six and he's home with his 3-year-old sister. And it occurs to me that one of the things that you can offer to kids of that age is just interaction with other people outside of their immediate family, so that they learn how to deal better with other people, things that all of the rest of us got naturally because we went to elementary school and we interacted and we learned how to relate to people. But kids who've been necessarily shut in for the last 6 months and maybe for months more in the future can benefit from the social part of being in your program as well.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why we think that the services that we offer are really important, because that those group sessions offer that social development and opportunities for growth in that arena. Additionally, you mentioned about parents kind of filling in and trying to supplement kids' education. We recognize that a lot of parents have things that they have to pursue on their own, whether it be work, whether they're first line workers, or they have other things to do for themselves at home. And that's one of the other reasons why Board of Boredom is a pretty great program, because it provides an opportunity for parents to be able to focus on the stuff that they need to do, whether that be work or personal development or taking care of their family in other ways, so that we can provide the education and alleviate a lot of burden on parents and guardians.
You know, a few months ago, Steve and I spoke to a child therapist, I think it was. She's actually a Palisadian, Dr. Dorothy Clock. And she was talking about the fact that when parents get overly involved in tutoring their children in any subject, it tends to be wrought with friction, and that it isn't always the best way to build relationships. So I do think that the fact that you guys can, you know, readily offer sort of that insert is probably very helpful. I also want to say, among your testimonials, there's one person who says your classes not only provide knowledge in a safe environment, but also positive and healthy social interaction in which each kid gets to participate. So, yeah, sounds like you guys are addressing a whole lot of ills. As we wind up, I do want to end with one other testimonial, which is really lovely. It sounds like it has an impact. It has a global impact. But Steve?
No, go ahead.
Parting thoughts. So she says, where do I start? This program has been a lifesaver for our family, as I work full time, as you were saying, Hope, and my husband is overseas. Thank you to all involved for your dedication to the kids and the hard work. So you guys are doing it. You're making an impact. Congratulations. Here goes the rest of the world.
You guys are amazing. You've accomplished something really incredible in such a short period of time, and I look forward to seeing what you do as you move forward.
Thank you. We were so honored to be invited to speak with you guys today on this podcast. It was a wonderful experience, and we hope that we can get the word out a little bit more about our services and about, obviously, our fundraising. And again, we're just so thankful for this opportunity and so happy that you guys thought that we would be good people to speak with today. So thank you both for that, and thank you for the dedication, time, and effort that you put in for this initiative. I think it's definitely helped people remain connected and have some entertainment and also information during these unprecedented times. So thank you guys.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. We are honored to be here, and this was very enjoyable.
Absolutely.
Yet another reason for Pacific Palisades to be proud of being Pacific Palisades.